But in the midst of all these celebrations, in the midst of all the lighting of candles and offering of flowers and feeding of monks and listening to lectures and even meditating, in the midst of all these activities of this particular day, there's a question which inevitably arises at least in the minds of some people. And that is this, that we speak of the Buddha, we speak of the Buddha as having attained on this Vaishakha full moon day enlightenment, perfect enlightenment, supreme enlightenment. We speak of him as having awoken to the truth of, as it were, having rent the veil of illusion, seeing truth face to face in all its fullness, in all its perfection. But the question that still arises is this: how did Siddhartha Gautama attain perfect enlightenment? How did he become the Buddha? Surely this is a question that must arise in every thinking mind as we celebrate Enlightenment Day, Vaishakha Purnima Day, today. How did the Buddha become Buddha? And this is the question with which we shall be concerned this evening. The question of how Siddhartha Gautama became the Buddha. The question of the way to enlightenment, the way leading to that great experience, that great event in his life, on account of which we remember him and commemorate him today. And this question, the question of how enlightenment was gained, the question of the way to enlightenment, what one must do, what path one must follow to be enlightened, as the Buddha was enlightened, this is not just a theoretical question. Of course, people can approach it theoretically if they wish, as they can approach any question, even spiritual questions, theoretically if they wish. But essentially, basically, this is not a theoretical question at all. This is a question which is of, we may say, the greatest practical importance. Because, as has already been suggested, the Buddha was not born enlightened. He attained enlightenment, perfect enlightenment, only after many years of struggle, many years of effort, even after making mistakes. So the Buddha was, we may say, the forerunner. He found the way. He was the pioneer, or we may say he blazed the trail, because not only did he gain enlightenment himself, but he showed to others, he showed even to all men, how they can follow the way, how they too can gain enlightenment if only they make the effort. So when we speak of the way to enlightenment, we're not just speaking of the path which was followed 2,500 years ago by the Buddha, but we're speaking of a path which we too can follow here and now, follow, that is, if we do want to evolve, if we do want to develop, if we do want to make actual our full human potential, which is, we may say, a more than human potential, a spiritual, even a transcendental potential. So this is the way, this is the path with which we are concerned. Not just the Buddha's path, not just the path that the Buddha followed, but the path that we too must follow if we wish to evolve, to develop, even as he evolved and developed into a Buddha. So this is why we are concerned with this great question, with this great subject this evening. In other words, what we are really doing, or what we should be doing, is not just celebrating the Buddha's enlightenment, as it were celebrating it as a thing of the past, we're reminding ourselves, as it were, on this occasion, that it's time that we started thinking about our own enlightenment, if in fact we've not already started thinking. Now, there are two ways of approaching this subject. There are two ways of approaching the way to enlightenment. We can approach it in the first place in terms of stages of progress. We can think of the way to enlightenment as being like a sort of, if you like, road. Along the road you find so many milestones, marking the distance along which you travel. So in much the same way, we can speak of the way to enlightenment as consisting of so many different stages. And there are many accounts of this sort in Buddhist literature, Buddhist tradition. We speak, for instance, of the three great stages of the path to enlightenment. That is to say, the stage of ethics, the stage of concentration and meditation, the stage of wisdom, of knowledge and insight. And then again, we speak in terms of the seven stages of purification. And in this way, there are so many ways of subdividing, so many ways of classifying, so many ways of looking at the successive stages of the path. And secondly, we can approach the way to enlightenment in terms of the actual events of the Buddha's life. In other words, in terms of the events which culminated when he was 35 in his attaining enlightenment. So it's the second approach that is going to be adopted this evening. The second approach, that is to say, approaching the way to enlightenment through the actual concrete events of the Buddha's life, is much less usual, much less common than approaching the way to enlightenment through a sort of survey of the stages of the path. But it is, I feel, more appropriate to the present occasion. So, first of all, I shall be giving a resume of the traditional account of the Buddha's life, not the whole life, not the whole life of 80 years, but the events of the first 35 years, that is to say from the Buddha's birth up to the attainment of enlightenment, and this will give us a general idea of the way to enlightenment, and then I'm going to take up for more detailed examination certain crucial events in his life, or groups of events in his life. That is to say, events which had a very definite bearing on our own process of development and attainment of enlightenment. Now, like the whole traditional account of the Buddha's life itself, the events, the special events with which we shall be dealing, are in substance historical. We know that they actually did happen, but at the same time they do contain, in the versions which have come down to us, certain what we may describe as legendary elements. And these legendary elements, as I've explained on other occasions, help to bring out the universal significance, the sort of inner spiritual dimension of the events themselves. And they make it clear, among other things, that these events are not concerned just with the career of a particular person, however gifted, but they deal with, they describe, we may say, the career, the potential career at least, of every man and every woman who wants to be an individual. Alright, then first of all, the resume of the traditional account of the life of the Buddha. Very often, books on the subject, books on comparative religion will tell you that the Buddha was born in India. But this is not strictly correct. The Buddha was born, in fact, in southern Nepal, or the southernmost portion of what is now the state or kingdom of Nepal. And the father of the Buddha, we know, was Suddhodana, and Suddhodana belonged to a tribe of people known as the Shakyans, who had lived in that particular area, that is in the foothills of the Himalayas, for many centuries. The Buddha's father, Suddhodana, was apparently a leading man in the tribe or in the clan, and at the time of the Buddha's birth, he seems to have been occupying the position of elected head of the tribe. Apparently the Shakyans had a sort of semi-republican form of government, and they elected a sort of Raja, a king or president, who governed, who administered at least, for a period of some 12 years, after which they elected somebody else. So it seems that at the time of the Buddha's birth, his father, Suddhodana, held this office, this 12-year office of Raja of the Shakyans. So we can see from this that the Buddha was born into a quite prominent family of the Shakyans. The Buddha's mother was known as Mahamaya, and she was the daughter of the chief of a neighbouring tribe, which was known as the tribe of the Koliyas. And the Buddha happens to be born not in Kapilavastu, where his father lived, but in a grove, in a grove of sal trees, in fact, at a little place called Lumbini. And this happened in the following way. It was then the custom, and it is still the custom in many parts of India, that the first child has to be born in the house of the mother's parents. So that when the mother-to-be feels her time approaching, she goes to her own parents' house for the delivery of the child. So apparently this is what happened or was going to happen in the case of the future Buddha. His mother, Mahamaya, set out for her own father's capital city. She left Kapilavastu, which was her husband's city, and she was travelling. As far as we know, she was being taken in a palanquin on the shoulders of four stout men. But halfway there, before she even reached her father's house, she was seized with the pangs of labour. She dismounted, and in a grove of sal trees at this little place called Lumbini in southern Nepal, she gave birth to the future Buddha. And tradition tells us that she died 7 days later, back in Kapilavastu. And the Buddha was reared, was raised, by his maternal aunt, that is to say, by his mother's sister, whose name was Mahaprajapati Gautami, whom apparently King Suddhodana had also married.